This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dawe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
For this month's Job Bite, I'm speaking to a new postdoctoral researcher here at the John Dawe Banks Centre for Astrophysics, Dr. Joe Zuntz. Welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And you've recently moved from University College London, is that right?
I have. I was in UCL for a couple of years, and then Oxford, and then London, so I've been bouncing around for a while now, yes.
Been all over the place. So what is it that's led you to go to those different places?
Sure. So I've been trying to get sort of experience with different kinds of astronomy, so I'm trying to, as well as bouncing around by place, bounce around by wavelength as well. So I'm spending a bit of time doing microwave data, and now I've sort of moved into the optical world of survey astronomy.
And are you then tying all those together?
That's the idea, yes. So I'm a cosmologist, and a big part of my job is sort of collecting different kinds of astronomical data and putting them into one framework and trying to get constraints or trying to get information on different things about the cosmos and the whole universe and pull those things together from different kinds of data and see if you can combine them in a way that's both sort of logical and makes sense, but also sort of accounts for all the problems that we see in different kinds of data. Because every kind of astronomy has its own bugs, its own problems, its own features, and sort of accounting for all those things in a way that's sort of consistent with everything is a big part of the challenge of what I do.
Yeah. So you're sort of finding the same information from different sources? And
exactly, yeah. So there's a few kind of really big questions that we're after in cosmology right now, mainly to do with the word dark. So we're interested in dark energy and dark matter, so we're asking ourselves, we're asking the question, what is the behaviour of dark energy, and that kind of question. And there are all kinds of different handles on that from different kinds of data. So we can look at things a very, very great distance away to try and get a handle on the early universe and understand that. Then we can look at things in the later universe and try and match those things together. So it's a question of finding a theory that matches up predictions on both the early universe and the late universe and the universe in different wavelengths and trying to put those things together.
Okay, so when you were doing the microwave studies, did that involve the cosmic microwave background? Because obviously here we've had quite a big stir all about Planck and the recent measurements of the cosmic microwave background.
Exactly, yeah. So I worked on a couple of different microwave experiments, but more importantly using microwave data from all different experiments and trying to understand it. So the microwave background, the cosmic microwave background, or CMB, is this early universe phenomenon. We see the earliest light in the universe, and it's a fantastic snapshot of what the universe was like just very shortly after it began. So it's a great handle on everything else. So the late universe is a very confusing place. The late universe is full of, you know, exploding stars and colliding galaxies, and they're very hard to understand. The early universe is hard to measure, but it's very easy to understand. It's what we call linear. There was very little structure in the early universe. It was very simple and very plain. And all the things that would later become clusters of galaxies and enormous superstructures at that time were just tiny little ripples in a very sort of flat background. So it's a fantastic handle, that kind of data, on the early universe, and we then have to try and figure out what happened between then and now,
right.
is the big question we're trying to do.
Wow, I never thought of looking at it that way before, but the early universe being a slightly simpler place.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's very hard to measure, don't get me wrong. It's horrendously hard to actually measure with telescopes. It's an enormous challenge that people like working on Planck have spent decades doing, so it's a huge technical challenge to do. But the actual physics of the early universe is much simpler than the physics of the late universe, just because, yeah, there's none of this stuff we call gastrophysics, so the gas physics of, you know, complicated things interacting doesn't really happen so much in the early universe. So everything's a simple mathematical expansion around a sort of plain background. So,
and your current work, what sort of thing does that involve? Are you looking at the complicated later universe as well now?
I am, yeah. So I've moved forward in time through my career, and I'm now working on a survey called the Dark Energy Survey, or DES, or DES, which is looking at the late universe. So we are making the biggest map that's ever been made of anything ever.
Wow.
It's our goal for the next 5 years. Now, that's obviously a challenge. And one of the things you can do when you do these sort of grand scale surveys is look at the universe in lots of different ways. So most of what we're looking at is galaxies. So the thing you see most of when you look out into the deep universe is loads and loads of galaxies. Mm. And if you have a fantastically high precision, high resolution telescope like the Hubble Space Telescope, you see these beautiful spiral arms and these beautiful structures and these lovely things that we see when we think of pictures of galaxies. If you're trying to make a really large map like we are doing with DES, you can't pick out individual galaxies at that level of precision anymore. So instead you're getting very blurry pictures of hundreds of millions of galaxies rather than one beautiful picture of one. So that's the idea. So we're using these kind of pictures. We're going to cover about an eighth of the entire sky over the next 5 years. And we're going to see hundreds of millions of galaxies, is the numbers we're expecting. And we're going to do a bunch of different things with those galaxies to try and map out the evolution of the universe over the last 5 or 10 billion years.
Wow. So there's a survey that I really liked called the 2-degree field survey, or 2DF, which I remember was mapping galaxies, and they sort of gathered in these kind of filaments. And that was obviously mapping what you could see, which is only this small, 5% or something of our universe. And then I can imagine a dark matter survey perhaps trying to trace that out. How on earth do you trace the dark energy? I mean, how do you map that?
Sure. So we never measure dark energy directly. So it's not. It may not even be a thing, as far as we know. We don't know if it's a thing that you can map or if it's just the same everywhere. And that's the big question we're asking, actually.
Right,
is
okay.
Does dark energy cluster, or
right.
is it uniform everywhere? So it may not even be possible to make a map of dark energy. So instead, what we're doing is looking at the effects of dark energy on matter, on structure. So we're looking for its effects on the growth of clusters of galaxies and the growth of how galaxies cluster together. We're doing that in kind of two main ways. So you can look at things like the 2-degree field that you mentioned. The mainstream of surveys that have been done so far work on looking at the positions of galaxies. So you make a map of little dots of light where all the galaxies are across the cosmos.
You measure their distance.
You measure the distance to them, you measure their kind of position in angle as well, so mm-hmm. you do that very carefully. And that way you get a map of the position of galaxies. But that's not really, like you say, most of what the universe is. So most of the matter in the universe is dark. It doesn't fall into galaxies. It doesn't cluster like that. We know it's there for various reasons that I won't go into, but we're pretty sure it's there, but we would like to map it. So what we have so far is a bit like if you have a map of Britain, but all you have on your map is a position of all the post offices.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting map, and it's really useful. It's just a bunch of points of dots. But it doesn't really tell you the underlying geography of what you're looking at. It gives you clues, but it's not the same thing.
Mm.
So the way we're kind of moving forward now in astronomy is something called lensing. So lensing is a very well-known historic phenomenon. Basically, the same way that glass bends light when you look through a magnifying glass or a telescope, gravity bends light in the same way. So when light goes around a big thing like the sun or like a galaxy or like a cluster of galaxies or like some dark matter, it bends and its path changes, just the same way as a moving object kind of curves around a gravitational force as well. So we can use that effect, we can measure that effect on hundreds of millions of galaxies by looking at the shapes of these little galaxies and how it's been twisted and warped by the intervening gravitational force between us and it.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing that, we can look at how this effect changes across space. So we can make a gravity map of the universe.
I see.
So the only thing that dark matter does, it doesn't produce light because it's dark. We can't sort of touch it or interact with it in that way, but we can detect its gravity. And that's sort of how we first came to realise it was there, and that's how we're going to map it in this gigantic scale as well.
And with the dark energy have a gravitational influence as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. So dark energy mainly has a gravitational effect on very, very large scales. So we look at the wider universe, and the acceleration of the universe is what we call dark energy. So it would certainly have that kind of gross scale effect. We don't know if dark energy clusters or not, like I said. So we don't know if it's going to have a local variation, but if it does, then that should have a gravitational force as well.
Right.
The main thing we're looking at is the gravity from dark matter, but if there is a gravitational force from dark energy as well, a sort of varying gravitational force from dark energy as well, then we can start to look at that too.
And how would you separate the dark energy from the dark matter? Or when you say the dark energy survey, is that taking dark energy to be both dark energy and
no,
dark
it's really no, it is about dark energy, but the name is slightly misleading. It's not the only thing we're looking at, certainly.
Okay.
But no, the idea is that once we've looked at how dark matter changes with time, changes with the history of the universe, so we know that the universe is clustering. So basically, if you have two blobs of matter, gradually with time, gravity will just pull them together.
Yeah,
just like you'd expect with any ordinary matter as well. So if you imagine two lumps of matter, over time gravity will pull those lumps of matter together, whether they're ordinary matter like the Earth and the Moon, or whether they're dark matter. So if you imagine a whole field of these of matter across the whole universe, that's all clustering into clumps. So matter starts off kind of spread out, and it gradually pulls together under gravity. And we're interested in how fast that stuff pulls together. And we're interested in how the clustering like that changes with size. So how often do you get big lumps of matter forming, how often do you get small lumps of matter forming? And it turns out that depends on dark energy. So that's an effect that's happening to dark matter, but it depends on dark energy. So basically the whole background that this thing is happening on, the whole wider universe, is all stretching as the universe expands, and it's also accelerating as dark energy pushes the universe out even further. And we can look at the effect of that acceleration on the clustering of structure and the pulling of structure together.
Okay.
And that's the exciting observable that we get from this kind of survey.
That is very interesting, because it seems like at the moment we know almost nothing about dark energy, and maybe if you found it was clustering, that would be really interesting, because I always think of it as, in my head, as being like the cosmological constant, which means it's everywhere and it's the same everywhere.
Exactly. So that's certainly our baseline theory. Our expectation is that we are expecting that the dark energy will be the same everywhere, a constant, like you say, a cosmological constant. But we don't really know that for certain. And there are certainly good constraints on how much this stuff can vary. We know it can't vary much, otherwise we'd sort of have seen that kind of effect before. But we also, there's various theories where dark energy is, in fact, not just a constant everywhere, but a field, so a varying field across the universe, like ripples on water. And so you can have areas of high waves where you have lots of dark energy, and areas, you know, a trough where there's less dark energy. And that's entirely possible. We don't know it for certain, and there's a Nobel Prize in it for somebody, not for me, sadly, but there's a Nobel Prize in it for somebody if it turns out that dark energy does actually vary and does actually change with position and time, just because that's a really surprising theory. I mean, dark energy is surprising enough as it is. It's weird enough, just the vanilla kind. But if it turns out it's also clustering and fluctuating across the universe, that's a real challenge for theoretical physics to understand why on earth that could be and what kind of theories could go into that. So that would, as well as being an amazing discovery, open up a whole new world of sort of discoveries that we'd have to do further research on.
Yeah.
So it's fingers crossed.
Yes. Although even if it did turn out to be smooth, you'd still have information about the dark matter.
Exactly. Yeah. So we don't even know the properties of dark matter, which is only the second weirdest thing in the universe. So we do want to understand things like, how does dark energy interact with itself? How does it cluster? And those kind of questions. Dark matter being the backbone of the universe means that it's a really important question about how it affects itself and how it interacts with ordinary matter. There's big questions, even if dark energy turns out to be the sort of plain thing that we're all expecting it to be. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, that's very exciting. And thank you very much. And perhaps now that you've joined the department, the listeners will be hearing more of you on the Jodcast as well.
I certainly hope so. Fantastic.
Thank you.